This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, thank you, everybody. This is the October 22nd meeting, phone meeting of the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee, and I'm going to start with roll call. I heard Judge Ockney already mentioned that she was on the line. How about Judge Bremer?
Yes.
Thank you. Judge Heinrichs? Okay, I'll hold just for a minute for Judge Heinrichs. Judge Nakamura, I heard you chime in earlier.
What yes, about I'm
Judge
here.
Riff? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Judge Riff?
Here.
Thank you, Judge. Judge Rockwell? I'd be joining from the bench. I'll call her name later. How about Judge Wong?
Judge Wong is present.
Wonderful. Thank you. Sherry Carter.
Sherry Carter here.
Thank you. Ms. Stephanie Cameron?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Arlene Jr.? Mr. James Kim, I heard you earlier. Thank you.
Yes, I'm here.
Mr. Mike Planet.
I'm here.
Thank you. Ms. Bonnie Sloan.
I'm here.
Thank you. And Kim Turner is on vacation. I'm going to go back over some folks that we missed earlier. How about Judge Heinrichs? Judge Rockwell? Ms. Arlene Jr.? Okay, we'll try them a little bit later. On the JCC staff side, I'm Leah Rose Goodwin, and with me today are some folks from Office of Court Research. Can you introduce yourself so we can hear your voice?
Kristen Greenaway. Kulon Erdenbacher.
Savat Hung.
Great. Any other folks joining us? Do I have Anna or Don Will from Center for Families?
Hi, Leah. It's Anna Maves.
Thank you, Anna.
Don Will.
Charlie Debner.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Is there anybody else that I didn't call out or actually, let me go back and just – we had three members who were not on the line earlier. Is Judge Heinrichs on the line? Judge Rockwell? Or Ms. Arlene Jr.? Okay, any other presenters on the line? Okay, Judge, I think that's it. We have a quorum, and would you go ahead and proceed with the, or actually I'll start by saying that we've had no public comment for this meeting, either written or request to speak. And so with that, can we start with the approval of the minutes of the last meeting?
Yes, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
This is Planet. I move to approve.
Second?
Judge Wong, second.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. So we have a couple of discussion items and a couple of informational items. Because we have some new members, the first one that we're going to talk about is the AB 1058, and just for the background for the new members, I wanted to give you just, and so for those of you that have heard this before, I apologize for being repetitive. In 2015, the Council formed a joint subcommittee to reconsider the allocation methodology that was developed in 1997 for the AB 1058 Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator Program, the allocation of money. The joint subcommittee, which included representatives from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and our committee, the Workload Advisory Committee, and the California Department of Child Support Services, and they were charged to reconsider the allocation methodology and report back to the Judicial Council. And the subcommittee gave us an interim report in February 2016 at the Judicial Council meeting, where it was then directed to develop a full work-based funding methodology incorporating the updated work on WAFM, the workload-based allocation and funding methodology, and that have DCFS review the funding allocations for local child support agencies. And the Joint Committee reformed and met and began to discuss the allocation based on workload and the consistent established programmatic guiding principles. The Joint Subcommittee completed its work in September of 2018 and was asked to report back to all the other committees, the FAM-JUV committee, the trial court budget advisory, and the workload assessment committee, the recommendation of their recommendation. This report is now going to be provided in response to the directive and includes the recommendations of the joint subcommittee as well as the report back from the three respective advisory committees. And so, Anna and Don, if you want to discuss the report.
Sure. Thank you very much, Judge. Attached report in your materials is the contains the recommendations of the joint subcommittee with representatives from each of the three advisory committees and the Department of Child Support Services. It explains in depth the process that the joint subcommittee took, which was similar to the process that the funding methodology subcommittee of trial court budget advisory committee took when reviewing WAFM. And essentially, for the Child Support Commissioner Program, the subcommittee established a number of guiding principles based on the need to align the funding with the work of the program, and also to take into account the federal, state, and contractual requirements for the funding. The funding comes through the federal government, with a state match that is provided to the Department of Child Support Services as the administrator of the Child Support Program state plan, and then the council contracts with the Department of Child Support Services for those funds for the Child Support Commissioner Program and the Family Law Facilitator Program in the courts. So as the program has been flat funded since 2008, and with shifting workloads, there was a need to reevaluate the funding methodology that was used. So taking into account the unique factors of the program, the identified guiding principles, and to develop something that was based on the workload, the joint subcommittee made a recommendation to use the cost determinations that similar process that was used for allocating the trial court funds through the WAFA methodology. The joint subcommittee decided that it was important also to protect the small courts to ensure that they could meet the statutory requirements that there be a child support program in every court. So determined that the Cluster 1 courts and courts that had an existing agreement for shared services could maintain the existing allocation amounts for those courts. The courts also were concerned with, or the Joint Subcommittee was also concerned with stability and use of funds, and made a determination that it was important to do an evaluation on the effects of the shifting of the funds, and so capped any change so that no court would receive more than a 5% increase in funding or decrease in funding. And then because it's difficult to sometimes to ramp up or ramp down with funding, made a determination that the funding should be looked at every 2 years. Also, historically, the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee had been in charge of making recommendations to the council with regard to allocation of the funds. But as the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee is really charged now with evaluating all of the funding for the courts, that responsibility would shift to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and that the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee would make recommendations to that committee for their consideration in making allocations. So with regard to the Family Law Facilitator Program, we fortunately had received, the council had received $19.1 million in the governor's budget for additional self-help funding. And because the self-help centers and the Family Law Facilitators' offices within the courts are so intertwined, there was a concern with implementing any kind of new methodology for the Family Law Facilitator Program would impact the ability for the Judicial Council to provide information to the legislature regarding the impacts of this new $19.1 million. There's a required legislative report to the legislature that talks about expanded services and the impacts of those funds. And so the concern by the Joint Subcommittee was that shifting funds at this point would inadvertently impact the ability to document that and may risk the ability to maintain that additional self-help funding. So at this time, the recommendation is not to implement a new funding methodology for the facilitators, but reevaluate that after the report to the legislature. Also, there, in addition to this fully funded, you know, federal and state dollars, there's also what we call the federal drawdown option, where there's a 66% federal dollars, and the courts have the ability to put in the 34% matching funds to draw down these federal dollars for the program. And the Joint Subcommittee is recommending that this continue to be an opt-in funding, that courts can indicate whether or not they have the ability to provide the match to draw down these federal funds, and that those funds be allocated in proportion to whatever the base funds or the total state federal funds that the court receives in the allocation. So those are essentially the recommendations that came out of the Joint Subcommittee. And then last Thursday, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee met and reviewed these allocations, or reviewed these recommendations, I'm sorry. And I, Sherry, do you want to talk to that, or would you like me to talk to that?
Why don't you go ahead if you'd like to. I'm happy to help if you prefer.
Sure. I'm happy to talk. The materials were revised that incorporated the comments from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee last Thursday. There was some concern that the language was unclear and that the intention was unclear. And so the recommendation, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee adopted the recommendations of the Joint Subcommittee with the amendments that were included in your revised material. So in recommendation two, there was a request that at 5% be included. So the new sentence reads, begin at reallocating AB 1058 Child Support Commissioner Program base grant funds based on the methodology in fiscal year 1920 as set forth in attachment B and described below to ensure that funding changes are capped and the inclusion of at 5% and smaller courts continue to operate their programs. And then an additional rewording of item 5, would the language would be changed to continue reallocation of funds every 2 years, beginning with fiscal year 21-22, considering the recommendations of the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee as presented to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee.
Hi, this is Judge Jennifer Rockwell. I just wanted to let you know I got on right as you were starting to speak. I just didn't want to interrupt. So I've been here since, like, right after people were finishing up on the minutes.
All right, Judge, thank you. And
thank
this you. Is, and Anna, I just want to clarify that the changes that were made to the recommendations were just enhancing the language of the existing recommendation. It was not... The changes made did not take the recommendations in a new direction, and we confirmed that at the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee meeting with the members of the Joint Subcommittee who were present at TICVAC. So that would be Judge Thompson from Nevada, Judge Cope, and Sherry. And no, I'm sorry, not Sherry.
Judge Conklin and Rebecca Flavio.
Yeah, Rebecca. So. As best as we could, we kept within the bounds of the Joint Subcommittee's work in just sharpening up the language of those two recommendations.
All right. Does anybody have any questions for Anna Mays or Don Will?
Uh,
So Judge Oxley, this is Mike Plant. I was also at the Funding and Methodology Subcommittee that reviewed and made the recommendation. So if it's appropriate, I will make the motion to approve the report and recommendations as proposed.
All right. Any second?
This is Judge Doctorow. Sorry.
Can we do that once more on the second?
This is Judge Nockamer. I'll second.
Thank you. I'm good, but not that good.
Any discussions?
So this is Judge Rockwell, and not so much a discussion on the substance. It might be helpful if the members of the committee could also be advised when these subs are having meetings. So I'm trying to figure out the context from something I read over the weekend, and sometimes I struggle. So it sounds like there was a lot of work, and I'm not saying I would be able to call in and just listen. And I understand just listening in, but it's an awful lot of material to just try and absorb over the weekend. And if we could have a little bit more heads up and even be, just be able to listen in to sort of the things that cause it to be developed in a certain direction, I think it would be very helpful in, one, just understanding it, and two, understanding sort of the policy issues that either a subcommittee or the joint subcommittees wrestled with.
Okay. What I can tell you is if we have another subcommittee, we'll make sure you get the notice.
And Judge Heinrichs, you had been the I don't think she's on the line. Judge, did you were you able to join us? That's too bad. So Judge Heinrichs had also been tracking the subcommittee's work and had provided feedback to us periodically about the direction of the recommendations. So she was uncertain if she was going to be able to join. It sounds like she wasn't able to ultimately. Unfortunately, I can't get her to give her feedback. But she had seen an earlier version of this draft report and had provided some commentary at our last meeting about the
We've been getting updates on this for the last 2 years. All right. I have a motion on the table. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. So that measure, the recommendation will be adopted. All right. So the next thing we're going to talk about is the proposed methodology. At the last meeting, we were talking about that new case that talked about how we're required to provide court reporters in family law and in all civil matters, and we had not originally used that in our allocation for workload or for FTEs. And so, Leah, why don't I turn it over to you?
Okay, terrific. So, yes, this is a response back to the direction given by the staff or given to the staff by the committee at the last meeting to return with a proposal for how to calculate the need for court reporters in family law and civil. And the report, I prepared a memo that starts on page 20 of the materials. And just in brief summary, we do have a methodology in the Resource Assessment Study Model, or RAS, for measuring the need for court reporters. We currently use that ratio for the mandated case types where court reporters are required. We also apply that ratio for a group of 15 courts where there are specific statutes in the government code that require those courts to provide reporters in all case types. And those specific courts are referenced in a footnote on page 20 as well. The basic principle of the ratio is that for every judicial officer needed in a case type where court reporters are needed, there's a ratio of 1.25 reporters for every judge. And the reason we use 1.25 is that court reporters cannot be interchanged with other clerical staff in the court. And so we need a little bit of extra coverage for vacation, sick leave, absences, and multiple locations. So for measuring the workloading in family law, which is the which was the requirement coming out of the 2018 Budget Act, it's fairly straightforward to use that same ratio applied to the judicial officer need in the family law case types. And so part of the proposed recommendation is that the committee consider doing exactly that. The second part of the analysis is assessing the need for court reporters resulting from the Jamison v. Desta decision, which I call Jamison through the report. And one thing that I want to correct is that on page 21 of the report, in the first paragraph that comes under the heading analysis, the last part of the last sentence in that first paragraph should read, those in which a litigant who is eligible for a fee waiver has requested a court reporter. I think that's a clear way of indicating what the Jamison decision was intending to do. So as I explained in the memo, it's a little more difficult to triangulate how that decision is going to translate into a need number for court reporters in civil. And first, to clarify, although Jamison references civil, the understanding is that civil encompasses family law, probate, mental health, and the unlimited civil case types. Right now, there is statute that allows for provision of electronic reporting in the limited civil case type, and so that case type was not considered for this analysis. So thinking of what cases might qualify for a court reporter, it's going to be those cases first that qualify for, or those litigants who qualify for a fee waiver. However, that subset of cases there's also an impact when you think about where those cases might be heard. Many courts operate with multiple court locations or hear civil workload in multiple courtrooms. And so while there may be some efficiencies realized by consolidating civil into a smaller number of courtrooms so that you can use the reporter more efficiently, that may not always be possible, and you may not always be able to identify those litigants who might qualify and request a court reporter. So with all of these different inputs having a different impact on the data, the best guess I think that we can make right now is to continue to use that 1.25 to 1 ratio. So for every judicial officer needed in the civil case types that don't already have reporter coverage, they would get the court reporter ratio of 1.25. But then I think we should discount, or the committee should consider discounting that need, that resulting need amount, by 50% in recognition of any of those efficiencies in scheduling that might lower that ratio. And then we come back next year to the committee once we get a sense for the how Jamison has been implemented, what the impact has been. It's only been a couple of months now. I think it went into effect on August 6th. And so I imagine that in a couple more months, we'll start to see patterns in scheduling, and we might be able to make a better and more accurate assessment. So the staff recommendation, which is on page 22, is two-part. The first recommendation is that starting with our workload estimates for the coming year, that's the 2019-20 RAS FTE estimate, that we start applying that 1.25 to 1 ratio of court reporters to judicial officers for the family law case types. And the second recommendation is that also starting with next year, that we approve that same ratio for court reporters in the civil and limited and probate case types. Those are the two remaining case types that currently aren't covered by court reporters if recommendation one were approved. And then we discount that ratio or that need number by 50% to account for that some of those, that subset of cases that qualifies for a reporter under the Jamison ruling. And then we come back next year once we have a little more data to provide a more precise estimate.
Hi, so this is Judge Rockwell. I've just got a couple of quick questions. So there's no new money for the 1920 year, right? This is based on the hope that the new governor will fund the BCP?
There's no new money for Jamison or for
well,
the
so
family law reporters?
So for the family law reporters, my understanding is there's current year money, correct? So there's 18-19 money.
Right. There was $10 million that was designated out of a $75 million allocation the branch received. $10 million was designated to provide court reporters and family law, and the specific language says that $10 million should not supplant existing expenditures on reporters and family law.
Right. But for 1920, there's no money. We have a BCP, is my understanding.
Correct, but Rocco, this is Rocco. Yes, we do have a BCP that was approved by the council to go forward to the Department of Finance.
So if that BCP is not funded and we fold this in, are we folding this into the current pot of money, or is this what happens here?
In terms of the workload need, I mean, it's a workload driver. What it'll do is it'll increase the cost of our workload, which will then, you know, as compared to available resources, will show a gap.
But speaking specifically of Jamison, we don't have the ability to not implement that absent funding.
Yeah.
Right. I wasn't suggesting that I did not mean at all to suggest that we don't all have to adhere to the Supreme Court's decision. I'm trying to figure out what the impact will be on the baseline budget if that BCP is not
It'll be
funded.
A substantial.
So I was trying to figure out where the money comes from.
Judge Rockwell, this is Judge Oxley. What it's going to do is it's going to show that we need more money because we have to hire additional court reporters. We have FTEs that we've got to pay for.
Currently, the WAFM need is based – the funding methodology is based on a certain workload measure. Adding this now mandated measure would obviously increase the cost of the model against our available resources. Is that satisfactory?
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out what the plan was. And
in our days at the Department of Finance, Judge, an unfunded cost just becomes
right.
A greater pressure on managing the resources and will have many unintended consequences if it's not funded in some form or fashion.
Understood.
James from Marin. So just a point of clarification on recommendation 2 where it says we'll reevaluate the workload. Does that just apply to number 2 in terms of the civil unlimited and probate cases, or does that also apply to the family law cases as well?
That's a really good question. I had intended it to only apply to the second part of it. It is true that generally we do periodically refresh the RAS model. We did the last time we did it was 2017, so it'll be up for refresh more or less in 2022.
Okay.
If something in the interim changes that suggest that we should come back earlier, we definitely can do that. And sometimes there are projects outside of the regular refresh cycle where we make an adjustment to the model based on new circumstances.
Okay.
All right, is there a motion, or is there any more discussion, I should say? All right, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you very much. The next thing that we're going to talk about are some informational items, and so I will turn it over to Leah to start that.
Okay, terrific. So the first item on there is the just a quick discussion about the committee's annual agenda. So this is the time of year when we start talking about the activities that we might do next year, and I didn't think to attach the current annual agenda in the meeting packet, but you can access it by going to the court's website at www.courts.ca.gov/WAAC www.waffle.htm. That will pull up the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee's webpage, and the annual agenda is right at the top. It's a PDF file. But in summary, we had four items on the annual agenda for 2018. The Judicial Workload Study was the main project on there. We also referenced the two mandated studies that we produce and have the committee review. That's the Judicial Needs Assessment and the Report on Standards and Measures of Judicial Administration. Both of those items are on the agenda next, so we can check both of those off as being complete. And finally, the last item we had on the 2018 annual agenda was the joint subcommittee work for AB 1058, which was also resolved on this agenda. So I say we were very productive today in checking off several of the items that were on the work plan for this year. So for next year, we will continue working on the judicial workload study. That work will wrap up around mid-2019. We also have an item that we've been carrying for a couple of meetings. This was a motion that was made at our April meeting for a reevaluation of the staff year value. We will take this item on. It was something that I think the committee had asked for us to work on this fall, but we are working with a reduced team, and so that means that we will have to push that out just a little bit before we can start working on it. Also at this time, we could have a discussion or we could ask committee members to get back to you, Judge Oxney, via email on other proposals that we could include in the work plan. And then we can take those proposals, assess the best time to deploy them and prioritize them at our next meeting.
Thank you, Leah. Unless somebody has one that they want to toss out right now, think about it, and if you do have one, send me an email. All right. I don't hear anything, so we'll keep moving. The last informational item that we have is the Judicial Needs Assessment update that has been included in your materials, and I know it's long and hard to read, but I'm hoping you guys read it so we can have a good discussion about it. Go ahead, Leah.
Okay, Judge, I'm going to give a quick introduction to it, and then Kulan Erdenbatar is going to talk a little bit about the findings in this year's assessment. So let me just start by acknowledging that the timing of this report is very challenging. It's challenging because we are obligated to report to the legislature on or before November 1 on the need for new judgeships. However, we are in the midst of updating the case weights for the judicial workload assessment. In fact, just today, the judges from the Los Angeles Superior Court started on the workload study. And so it's an understatement to say we are deeply in the midst of that study. So the timing is a challenge, and in order to address that, we have made a couple of changes to this report to hopefully overcome those challenges. So the first one is that we have added a large caveat section very close to the front of the report in which we talk about the update to the weights, and we also talk about some of the reasons why that we have heard judicial officers in our workload study mention for how the workload has changed in the in their court since the last time we did the study update in 2011. The other thing we have done is in the report we signal our plan to reissue the report with the new workload weights just as soon as they're finalized. So when we conclude the workload study update later this in early 2019, we will come back to the committee with a new 2018 updated judicial needs assessment with our with the new weights. So with that context, I'm going to ask Kulan to talk a little bit about the findings in the 2018 report. So these findings would be based on, again, the 2011 weights and the three most recent years of filings data. And so, Kulan, will you take it from here and talk a little bit about the report itself?
Yes. Thank you, Leah. so the the need for judgeships is generally determined by case weights, which are the average time it takes to process a case and then the number of case filings for that case type. So for this 2018 update, as Leah mentioned, we have used the three-year average case filings for fiscal years 2014 through 2017, and then the case weights that were developed in 2010 based on the judicial workload study involving 500 judicial officers. So this means that the current report, as Leah mentioned, do not reflect any of the changes that occurred since then in law and policies. For example, because of AB 109, the Criminal Justice Realignment Bill, judicial officers now have probation oversight of certain offenders, resulting in increased hearings and supervision. Another example is Proposition 47 that changed weights of the felony and misdemeanor workload. There are numerous other examples, such as increase in the number of identified mentally ill offenders, use of diversion programs and collaborative type courts, and expanded use of court interpreters. All of these changes affect the time it takes to process a case. So, again, as Leah said, we're in the midst of a workload study that will capture the impact of the changes I just mentioned, and we will have a new set of case weights, which will result in an interim report in 2019 after the Judicial Council approves the new set of case weights. So, now being said, I just want to give you a brief refresher on how the need for new judgeships are calculated. So first we calculate the assessed judicial need by multiplying the case weight by number of filings and dividing it by available time that judicial officers have to hear cases. Then we take the difference between the assessed judicial need and authorized funded positions in each court. Then this difference is rounded down to the nearest whole number to arrive at the number of judgeships needed for each court. Finally, we add the judicial need among only the courts that have fewer judgeships than their workload demands to determine the statewide need for new judgeships. So based on the 2010 case weights and the average filings for 2014 through 2017, we find that 17 courts need new judgeships for a total of 127 judges. This estimate does not include judicial vacancies resulting from retirements, elevations, and other changes that have not yet been filled. We all know that the case filings have been dropping, but despite this downward trend in case filings, California continues to have a critical need for judges, particularly in the Inland Empire, which has shown a need for new judgeships for a sustained period of time. The second part of the report is on SJO conversions. As directed by government code, this report addresses the implementations of conversions of additional SJO positions above the 16 authorized per year that result in judges being posted to family or juvenile assignments previously held by SJOs. Conversions of 10 additional positions have been authorized since 2013 through 2014. But no additional SJO positions above the 16 authorized per year have been converted under this authority. Thank you.
All right. Does anyone have any questions for Kulan or for Leah or for myself on this topic?
So this is Sherry Carter, and I'm sure, Judge, you're waiting for me to say something because I raised this last time. This was on our agenda. So I appreciate your patience with me. I have the same concerns that I did last time, although now they're even more acute, in providing this report, recognizing that the weights we're using for the judge workload are 7 years old. I recognize that we have a requirement to submit something to the legislature. I haven't seen the language. I was actually trying to find it and was unsuccessful in the few minutes that I had, to see whether or not it actually mandates the report or not. Because we are in the midst of gathering these new updated weights and hope to have them done in the spring-ish, I wonder if a better approach might be to have Martin, I think this is typically submitted under his signature, to submit a letter that in the effort of recognizing the requirement that we are in the middle of updating these important weights, they are 7 years old, that we have concerns with providing a report that is based on outdated weights and would like to submit the report by summer when the information is accurate. I am very concerned that we provide this report. I think it will result in a lot of inaccurate reporting every time they come out. We get a lot of stories in the various newspapers, and of course they're interested in what we're doing, so I understand that. But if we know the weights are wrong, I worry about providing a report that will become very public when we know that we're going to have updated weights in just a few months. So that's my suggestion. I don't know if it's possible, but I would not submit the report. I would submit a letter that will provide an accurate report in several months.
So, Zlatko, are you on the phone?
I am.
Do you want to have a comment on this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we did talk at length about this very particular concern that you'd raised, and we felt that given the requirement to submit, the narrative that was included in the report was intended to address those concerns, and so that's that type of information that we included in the report that Kulon just went through is in there, and it describes to those folks that we are complying with the law. But there is going to be an update. And so there was actually quite an extensive conversation about that. And this report is a result of the discussion with our executive office about whether even your approach is suggested was something we discussed. But ultimately it was that we are mandated to provide this information, but we are qualifying it with the additional narrative that was provided.
With all due respect, Zlatko, I read the report, and that comment is pretty much buried in the report. At a time where we are trying really hard to stabilize funding for the branch, it really does concern me that we would provide this report. We don't know what the numbers will look like with the updated weights, and it just seems like it's but I've expressed my view. I think it's a mistake, but I guess that's all I have to say.
Zlatko, this is Judge Offney. Is there some way that on the face page of the report we could write interim update? So it's like pretty clear right from the beginning that it's interim?
Is there anybody on the line?
I'm here.
I'm sorry, my line went dead at some point, and I don't know to what extent folks heard my response.
Zlatko, Sherry said that she doesn't agree with you and thinks that we shouldn't report this. Am I paraphrasing that correctly, Sherry?
I think I said strongly, but other than that, no, I'm teasing.
No, I didn't add everything in that you said, but.
I'm teasing.
And then what I said was, this is Judge Oxney, is there some way, because I did see that, that maybe the face page, the first thing that someone looks at is it says the 2018 interim update, or to use another word there, to let everybody, the reader, know right from the beginning that there's something about this that's not final.
So a little bit of wordsmithing on the cover.
It says the judgeships in the Superior Courts, and then it says 2018 update of the judicial needs, and you could say 2018 interim update. And then start right from the beginning that the court is currently in the middle of revising its case weights, however, providing the following report as required by government code, blah, 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 and then start with it. I mean, I understand, Sherry, what you're saying. I get it. What we don't know is whether it's going to get worse and there's going to be more need for these courts that need it and less for the ones that already have it, or whether it's going to be a complete flip. We just don't have any idea what that's going to do, right, Leah?
No, that's true. I mean, there's no guarantee that by weighting that we're going to come up with a set of weights that, you know, move things in a more, you know, positive direction with the court showing more need. We just don't have any information right now to make that call. But I do think that we could into, adding some better, clearer markers on the cover of the report to indicate that we're coming back with a revised report.
Because then at least when they get the revised report, you can say, as we told you in November 1, we had a different report coming. Here it is.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a reinforcement of that, which is throughout the report itself. We can definitely, I think, find some words. But, we did, again, talk about the need to reply, to provide the report. And I think that's a good solution to add to the cover.
Okay, so we will, as staff, make those changes and see if we can't highlight a bit more in the body of the report itself this.
Quite frankly, it could get the report. It could change more drastically the other direction.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
We really don't know, and that's the concern, especially, Zlatko, what I think you missed when your phone went dead, too, is at a time where I know Martin and others have been working, and you have been working on stable funding, to issue a report that appears as if the workload for the judicial officers may be going down when we don't know if that's true is what worries me. Because even in the presentation that we were given on our call today, the comment about the filings going down, those are in cases that are really not handled by judges and that are not complex, namely the infractions, some misdemeanors. But at least in our county, and I'm sure it's true in other places, our civil cases are going up, and many of our other litigation types are going up. And so I just think that to present a report at this point that may not be true when we have a new administration coming in, when we're working hard on establishing stable funding for the branch, and because we don't know it to be true, that's what worries me.
All part of it echoes the same conversation we had internally about it, and that's why the report's there. But I think that the suggestion to strengthen the front so it's very clear as to where we're at, I think is a good one.
This is James Kim. I guess, is there another formal sort of mechanism to provide an updated report? Like, I'm a little lost as to what that sort of looks like. So, like, if, let's say, we change the title becomes clearer, the report gets sent November 2018, when does the follow-up happen? Would that happen right after the study's done and the report is done? Like, is there a mechanism to do that?
So, James, this is Leah. So we signaled both in the report and there's a cover letter that accompanies the report that's not part of the meeting materials, but we do signal in both the cover letter and the report itself that our plan is to come back. I'm seeing the language is on page 26. We didn't put a specific date in the report. We just said an interim update. This 2018 report will be issued once the model has been updated and the workload need for judges can be computed on the basis of the updated weights and other model parameters. So we could actually say that's expected to be kind of mid-2019 to make it a little more concrete.
Yeah, I think that would personally help sort of clarify that something is coming, like this is actually
sure. An
interim report versus I think I share sort of Sherry's concern. I don't know politically if it looks worse to do a report with data that's 7 years old and then to say, oh, no, here's an update, and the update is either, you know, good or bad, or if it's better to wait and say, hey, we're in the middle of something, here is the most recent sort of up-to-date data.
Yeah,
and then
we have to comply with the law. So I think, James, that's a key for us, for
okay.
sure.
Okay.
But with all the caveats, and obviously our conversations with folks in the legislature and the Department of Finance, and as we go through this transition, we are sensitizing them to the changing nature of the world in the courts. So it's not a concept where if we didn't do it, and then we came out with an interim in next year, there would be skepticism as to why we didn't respond and provide at least a mandated report. And the caveats and the next additional narrative, I think, is all going to be important for everybody to maintain when we explain that to folks.
Okay. That helps, Alco. Thank you.
Okay. Any other further comments or questions about the Judicial Needs Assessment Report before we move on to the next one?
Sorry, I was talking, Leah, and I had my mute button on, so I thought you guys I thought you were just captivated with my words, but.
Oh, yeah. whatever you said, I'm sure it was super profound.
Yeah. So, there's no other comments on that one, we'll move on to our last item. All right, go ahead, Leah.
Great. So, this is also a report to the legislature. It's not, maybe quite as heavy loaded as the last report that we saw. So Government Code 77001.5 is a mandated report that came to us as a result of the 50 new judgeships that were allocated back in 2006. I am sure that none of the people that were here in the legislature are still here now when that report was first required of us. It was the report requires us to report on standards and measures of judicial administration, and so our court statistics report has a section that has some measures that we include in our report, and that is what we have included in this update. We have tried at various times to gauge the continued interest of the legislature in this report. It's unclear whether or not it's providing the information that they are seeking. It's not, it doesn't form the basis of any sort of funding requests or judicial need. So, but it does give us a chance to highlight some of our performance measurement that's done, namely on case clearance and the like. So that is also included. There is no action to be taken by the committee. The report does reference some of the other work products that the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee oversees. For example, there's a narrative section about the judicial needs assessment. And so that's why we bring it to this committee, just as a FYI, that will be going to the council at its November meeting as an informational item only. So that's all I had for that report. Are there any questions or comments? And if not, then we will go ahead and, Judge, I'll have you go ahead and conclude. You were going to mention about our next action items for the committee.
Right. So the next thing we need to do is to go back to the judicial needs assessment. We need to talk about that when we get it done. We're thinking when the interim numbers come in, is that going to be in January?
Right. So when the data collection closes, we are going to have some preliminary weights to share with the committee and get feedback on. And so, yes, our thought is that we will take care of that in January, and that will be an in-person meeting. There comes a certain point when we can't cover that information on the phone anymore, and so we will look for some time to do that.
So we'll be sending out something, save the date for something in January, and I'll remind you again, if you have suggestions for our annual agenda, please email them to me or to Leah. Anything else? Anything else from anybody? All right, the meeting will be adjourned at 12:50. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
February, May, March, April, May, June, July, August, October, eight. Right here.
Thousand.